Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk some baseball. Who better to do it than our man Ryan LaFever, of course, the face of the Kansas City Royals. You see him on the broadcast, hear him on the radio broadcast from time to time as well. He's brought to you today by our friends at Family Leisure, familyleisure.com. See him in person at K10 and Ridgeview. Great setup. If you want that theater seating, they got it. Sitting back and watching a Royals baseball game with the big screen. You got to have the theater seating, the ultimate setup, also the patio furniture, hot tub, spas. Great sale going on right now. And if you mention the program, if you mention A10, you'll save even more. It's at Family Leisure. See him in person. Dennis and his great staff, 25 plus years right here, locally owned and operated here in Kansas City. Go to K10 and Ridgeview. See him online at familyleisure.com. We welcome Ryan into the program. Ryan, how are you, my friend?
Good, Saran. And let me say before we continue how cool it was to see you and your family at the ballpark the other night. I had no idea you're going to be there. You sent me a text the night before saying you're in LAX. I'm wondering, what in the world is he doing in Los Angeles this late at night? Yeah. And then hearing about your daughter, Brooke, and the Braille competition and with Carly and Lynn there. And I don't know if you heard it or not, but as I'm watching you and your family, I'm thinking, I remember when Saran and Lynn started dating.
Yeah.
I remember when you guys came out to my old house.
Uh-huh.
And we were hanging out when we were young guys and all that. So that was really cool.
You know what? And you know, since you said that, first of all, thank you very much. You're always so kind and to me and my whole family. But I heard about the very kind words that you had to say on the air and to Rex as well. Rex had very kind words also. And so it was you know, that was nice because I got a lot of texts from everybody. Yeah, LaFever's talking about you and everything. And you're right. And I thought about it. I was telling my daughters about it when I saw those texts, and I said, hey, you know, Ryan's talking about you, Brooke, and then telling Carly, my younger daughter, and we were discussing. I said, you know, Ryan and I always kind of have a connection. And they're like, why is that? I said, well, you know, we kind of came to town at the same time. I said, you know, I came back to town and Ryan came in, you know, just ahead of me with, you know, starting with the Royals. And so we were both kind of guys and, you know, coming in and kind of having to make our way, you know, through the town and establish ourselves. And, you know, now here we both have families and kids and, you know, it's just, you know, we're kind of mirrored our time here in Kansas City. So I said, yeah, you know, it's really special to hear that Ryan saying that, because I've always felt like you and me are, you know, a little bit of kindred spirits, right? We're obviously very different people. You're a great guy. I'm not. But as far as the timeline goes, right, and similarities in life, you know, our lives have kind of mirrored themselves. So it meant a lot to have my daughter being on. First of all, and thank you to the Royals again. It's such a class organization. And the, you know, I've always thought that Buck O'Neill Legacy Award was fantastic. I never thought I'd be anywhere near the seat, right, like for any reason. So it was truly great. It was very touching and for my daughter to get that honor. But it was great to hear that you were mentioning it on the television as well. I was like, well, that's full circle. We're now officially both old farts, right? It's official.
All those gray hairs I see now, and I'm like, gosh, we were young, we hung out, and you know, we had no cares in the world except for our careers, and it's better now, of course,
yeah,
to be married and have kids. But I'm like, man, where did that time go?
Well, and I haven't had to move you in a while. You know, that's nice, because I remember moving you from your apartment to your house, and I haven't had to carry any boxes for you for quite some time, Ryan.
Now I know you probably want to talk about other things, but remember we almost ended Joe Randa's career. You remember that? It was moving into my house,
right?
And it was snowy in the driveway, uh-huh, and I had and he'd helped me out, and he was in the back of the truck, mm-hmm, and we took enough weight off the back of the truck where it began to skid down the driveway, and all of a sudden, yes, here comes Joe Randa jumping out of the back of the truck, and I thought, what if he landed on a patch of ice, yes, and blew out his knee helping Ryan LaFever move into his house?
Yeah. Royals third baseman's career over after helping broadcaster move. Yes. I had forgotten about that. That's right.
Oh, what a day.
Oh, good times.
Well, hey man, it's been a blast. Been a blast. We've come a long way.
We have. And it's always great to talk to you, buddy. And I always appreciate the time and making some time for us as the Royals are in Detroit to take on the Tigers. Brad Keller, man, there are times, like, let me tell you how many fantasy dollars I have spent in auctions on Brad Keller over the years. I'm a big fan of his. I like Brad Keller, the guy. And when he is on, you're like, we got a top of the rotation guy here. And he just, for whatever reason, has not been able to, you know, turn that into, you know, have good Brad Keller come to the mound, you know, 4 out of 5 days like you need to do to be a top of the rotation guy. What as you look at it, is missing from Brad Keller getting that to all click?
Yeah, as you're asking the question, I'm just thinking about some of the numbers I was going through preparing for the game tonight. And I see a guy who just hasn't really figured out who he is and what his real strength is. And let's talk pitching basics, okay? His first pitch strike rate is the lowest in the major league amongst starters, okay? That's you can't go anywhere with that unless you just have this, you have exceptional stuff and you have a way to get, you know, back into the count and the strike zone. But going 1-0 with hitters more than anybody else, I mean, you're going uphill right away. There are years when his two-seam fastball is better than his four-seam fastball. This year, his four-seam fastball is better than his two-seam. He's had years where he's had success getting strikeouts. So then the next year, it looks like he's trying to get a bunch of chase and a bunch of strikeouts, and that backfires. And so he's got all the weapons, but I think, and this goes for the entire pitching staff, but command of the fastball and throwing strike one. I mean, that's just, it sounds like an easy fix, but every good pitcher can command his fastball, and he's 0-1 way more than he's one ball and no strikes. But it feels like a guy who has, he's got a tent full of weapons, but he can only take two or three with him out into the battlefield. And he's got to figure out, okay, this one works for me, but is this going to work for me for the long term? I got to take my three best and begin to master those before I move on. That's what I see.
Would he be better eliminating some pitches? I mean, is he, you know, what is the thing? You know, I can't remember what it is. Jack of all trades, master of none. Like, does he have all the pitches and it's too many to try to really hone in on and be sharp with? I mean, because I know one of the things I remember when early on, maybe in a second year, Fangraphs, I think it was Fangraphs, did a thing where they wrote a story about him and they talked about him, you know, tunneling. Like, he was their prototype on how to tunnel. Like, here it is. Basically, watch his hand. Here, every single pitch, his, you know, it was exactly the same. They overlay the videos of a bunch of pitches on top of it. And they had like five or six different pitches. And then the arm action was the same. You saw almost, you know, it looked exactly the same. And then the ball would go in all these different directions because it was a different grip. And this was his curve. This was his slider, what have you. And this was the cutter and how all the, and it would show these six baseballs just go to six different spots and how hard it was to hit against him. And you're like, oh my God, the Royals have this, you know, he's got it all. And yet that's never translated. And it seems like, well, is it, you know, they're all pretty good and they found the best ones of all those, but he can't do that. He can't repeat that. So that's why he can't get that strike one is the first. If he gets you down, he's hell on wheels, but he can't get that. If that first offering's not going, it's going to be an easy day for the hitters to just lay off.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I was talking about Jackson Kolar the other night. It might've been the game that you were there. But I'll get back to Keller here, but I said Jackson Kolar reminds me of Lou Kochaver in a guy that just has it all, but maybe too much right now. And he needs to master one or two and then build from there. Not, okay, I've got four, let's use them all and figure out which ones are working tonight and then start as that being the starting point. And so I think what applies to Keller is, okay, what are my two best pitches? And let's make those two best pitches the very best pitches that they can be. And then we'll go to the third one. And I had a pitching coach tell me, I don't remember who it was, but that adding pitch, and it was in reference to Jorge Lopez, but it was, what are your two best pitches? Make those as best as they can be, with the third one in the back of the hitter's mind. But when you want to add a pitch and make it a good big league pitch, it might take years for that to happen. Whereas now, you know, they want the immediate results. I'll use another guy for you. did you think Chris Bubich was pretty good last year? I did.
Yeah.
And I thought when he started incorporating that curveball, I thought, okay. Well, then he goes into spring training and he wants to add a slider. Why? Let's stick with the fastball, curveball, and change that are working for you. And then, yeah, somewhere down the road, if you want to throw a slider, but do you want to incorporate a fourth pitch that you don't really need? Or do you want to make your three best pitches even better? So now tying it back to Keller, I think it's the same philosophy. He has a lot of things that he can do. But when you have stuff, and stuff is movement and velocity, it's not, do you throw strikes? It's not any kind of percentages like that. When you're grading a pitcher's velocity and movement, and they say you have good stuff or above average stuff, you're just talking about velocity and movement. That's it. He has that naturally, which you just can't teach. Start there, master those, and then when the league tells you you need another pitch, then add the next pitch.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. Is you know, the fans are obviously they come to, okay, well, we want one solution. And I've always said this, that, you know, as fans, we want to fire the head coach or fire the general manager or fire, you know, the offensive coordinator, or, you know, whatever the sport is, we want one guy. We want to identify that as the problem. We want to change that. And we want it all fixed. And it's never that easy, right? It does ultimately have to start somewhere. And the adage that you can't fire the whole roster is real. And eventually things come around. Is the voice, you know, that message that you're talking about refining the pitches, is the voice the same? Like, we've heard about Alex Zumwalt here for a while, that, you know, he was kind of becoming the guy that was building how the hitting approach would work all the way up through the process. And then he would hand off, and now he's not handing off. Now he's the guy here at the big league level, and they're going to try that and see if that fits. I mean, he's obviously going to be with the organization, but will be in this role, in this capacity, or they kind of, you know, bring him back to the role that he had. But is there a voice that's missing on the pitching side from throughout the organization on guys not getting that message before they get here? And so Cal Eldred is trying to, and Mike Matheny and everybody else, the catchers, you know, are trying to finish the development of pitchers at the highest level, which is an incredibly hard thing to do.
Yeah, that's a good question. My first thought would be that the voice, whoever the voice is, has to be a very powerful and trusted voice, because there are so many more now than there used to be. Because the other one that you have to factor in there, Seren, you don't just have the minor league influence on you getting to the big leagues, and then the big league influence on you when you make it to the major leagues, but who's the one that's coaching them in the off season? That's sending them text messages during the season, or who's the pitcher calling when they want advice? Are they going to the major league pitching coach? Are they trusting the major league pitching coach? Are they going to their minor league pitching coach? Or is it their guru that they use during the fall and the winter? So I personally think that whoever that voice is in the organization has to be a strong and a trusted voice, because it's coming from everywhere more than ever. And as much as data and analytics are interesting for fans and for broadcasters, if you don't have the right personality, it just becomes very confusing. I mean, there's so much to take in that I think they lose just the natural feel for pitching, you know, reading the hitter, reading the situation. And, you know, you're talking about Alex Zumwalt. Alex Zumwalt, you know, he speaks the language. And Paul Splitorff taught me this a long time ago. Split said, in reference to pitching, but it applies to hitting too, that the basics of pitching just have not changed since the beginning of the game until today. What's changed is the language and the focus. It's just worded differently now, or pitchers or hitters are just looking for different information that just connects with how they see hitting during their era. And so the voice has to be a strong one, and it has to be a trusted one. Because these guys are getting way more information and way more people talking to them than ever before.
That is my man, Ryan Lefevre, of course, the face of the Kansas City Royals, brought to you by our friends at Family Leisure. Great hot tub, pool, spa sale going on right now. Patio furniture, best around. I mentioned I bought my patio furniture back in 2004, and I've just been adding and adding and adding. Adirondack chairs, love them. Nobody has a better selection than the folks at Family Leisure. Go see them, locally owned and operated for 25 years, familyleisure.com. In person, it's K10 and Richie. When we come back, we'll stay on the pitching side of things. I want to talk to Ryan about Jackson Coar. Very good. Bullpen. We'll talk more pitching next here in the program. Welcome back. You're listening to the program on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We're talking some Royals baseball with my man, Ryan LaFever, the face of the Kansas City Royals. You see him on the TV, you hear him on the radio as well. Great, great broadcaster for the Kansas City Royals. Great friend of the program as well. Ryan, thank you for the time as we get ready for this game between the Royals and Tigers. Jackson Coar, I thought was, you know, brilliant, especially early in his outing. There have been a lot of pitchers that have had a lot of success, great pitchers. Pedro Martinez comes to mind. I talked to David Wells the other day. He didn't like it, but he started in the bullpen and went on to great success. I think it gives you a chance to, you know, we're talking about, you know, pitching your best stuff and you know, I think when you come out of the bullpen, you can work on it. You only see guys once, so you can work off just your best stuff and really perfect your best stuff. The Cardinals have been a great example of that. They've always had a good rotation where guys didn't have to be thrown in. I mean, the Royals, I'm sure, would love to not have to say, hey, our youngest guy, this is the guy you got to start because you're our best option, right? And be able to break these guys in as relievers, or would they? I think it's great having guys, you know, just get a chance to come up and see hitters only once. But I think the Royals need to get to that point, right, where they have enough starting pitching that they don't have to throw guys in there and say, okay, you got to go. But that being said, some guys are just better relievers. Do you see Coar being a reliever or going through an evolution where eventually he transitions back into being a starter?
I've asked that question many times because, you know, there's just difference in philosophies. And what I'm getting today is just kind of reflective of the world we live in right now, in that there's not just one solution to every issue. I mean, you have to be individual based on the person's needs, the future with the team, his personality, what he's ready for, and all that. So, but let's use a couple of examples that we've seen in Kansas City. Zach Greinke. Zach Greinke was never the same after he went to the bullpen, because it was one inning at a time. Here's my best. And then when we get to the second inning, I'll start worrying about the second inning. Danny Duffy was the same way. Danny Duffy was never the same after he went to the bullpen. And both of those guys, and I'll add Keller to it, I wondered, just watching the team, these guys going to be closers? I mean, wow. This is amazing what they're doing in the eighth and ninth innings. But the theory was, okay, let's just go one inning at a time. And if you got someone out there who's overthinking and they're thinking about pacing themselves and, well, I got to make sure that I still have my good stuff in the sixth inning, so I got to think about that now in the first inning. Well, you may not see the sixth inning. Let's treat the first inning as just one inning. And then when the second inning comes, then we'll do the second inning. So I think you're right. I think that's changed, because it used to be the other way around. It was, let's give these guys as many innings as possible, as many different scenarios. Let's train them to use their two best pitches first two times to the order, and then ease in your third pitch third time to the order. Well, the game's changed. I mean, six innings is, if you get six innings out of a guy now, you know, we're satisfied with that. So the thinking of saving yourself for later in the game just doesn't apply, because guys just don't go seven, eight innings like they used to. So what I've seen, just based on the examples in front of me, I agree with what you're saying, that now it has, and especially with how explosive the game is now, just, you know, swinging as hard as you can and throwing as hard as you can. I think you want to build inning by inning now, as opposed to giving them this surplus of innings and just hoping the sheer number of innings and experience is going to refine them.
Is that, you know, because it you know, I love how you use the term explosive, because a lot of pitchers, you know, I remember, like, Luke Hudson was a guy. I remember when he came up and he had some success, and I'm like, this just isn't going to work, because he looks like he's pitching as a reliever, as a starter. He's just max effort every time. And of course he blew out. And I think there was, you know, I'm not saying I nailed it or anything. I may have just been coincidence, but that's what it always kind of looked like to me. And, like, you know, you mentioned, you know, Zach Greinke is just kind of free and easy out there. And you can tell that there's probably more in the tank that he can go get if he has to get it, but he can beat you at 80%. You know, he's running the marathon. And if he has to go to the sprint, he'll go to it. But for the most part, he's just steady, easy going down the road. But it seems like a lot of guys today are max efforts, and they can go for four or five innings, and maybe they're going to blow out and their career is going to be short, but they're coming out and just blowing guys away. If that's where the game's gotten to, and the Royals are trying to get guys to go seven, and hitters, because all boats rise with the tide, are now, you know, so good that they can handle max effort stuff and still be productive, are you trying to, you know, is that counterproductive, trying to get guys to go deep into games? Is that a counterproductive approach to how the game has evolved and has to be played today?
I think so. I think definitely. And I think it's a hard thing to get today's players to unlearn. I mean, it's always been hard, because every pitcher through high school and college is evaluated mostly by one device, and that's the radar gun. When I was in college, I had a teammate named Jeff Schmidt who went in the first round to the Angels, and I played center field. And I remember our first game of the season in 92, we were in the University of Arizona, and with every pitch, like 50 radar guns went up. And it was like, how do you focus on pitching and doing anything else when that's all you see is all these radar guns go up? That's just how guys are being evaluated now. Thankfully, there are more devices now that can reward a player for movement and vertical rise and all that kind of stuff. It's not just velocity, but by and large, it's velocity. And so when you have old school pitchers now who are frowning upon today's starters and like, you know, well, when we pitched, you know, we'd go 120 pitches or 150 and nobody said anything. Or when we pitched, you know, if you only went six or seven innings, that felt like a failure. Well, they're just not being raised that way anymore. It's not their fault. I mean, this is how they're being trained in the minor leagues. And to your point, I mean, it's just, they just don't have the stamina anymore to go that long. I mean, you're just going to run out of gas, and eventually, you know, your arm only has so many pitches at a certain effort. And then, you know, you got to get cut open and you got to start all over again. But, and it just takes somebody mentally strong, like Zach Greinke, for, you know, the better part of his career to just have the self-control to say, yeah, I can throw harder, but I want to, he said something to me. I mean, it's just been so fun having Zach come back now at this age, you know, coming up on the edge of 40 now. And he still has his quirks, and, but there's 18 years of major league experience now and being a husband and a father and everything. But, you know, he said something so simple to me earlier in the year. He says, well, I can throw harder. I can even throw harder now, but I want to know where the ball's going to go, and I don't want to hurt my arm. Now, he finally goes on the injured list for the first time in 19 major league seasons that has something to do with his arm. I mean, there has to be something, you know, there's something to be said with that, but that's just the world we're living in right now. Is it's just an explosive game, and throw as hard as you can. So to think you're going to get six, seven, eight innings out of these guys every start, it's not reasonable. So I think you have to do it in reverse. You know, how can you be more effective early on instead of waiting for later in the game, because you're probably not going to be there later.
Do you think Zach will be back?
I hope he is. I really do. And I get the feeling he would like to be back. You know, I mean, we all know that he left because he didn't feel like we were going to win. And, you know, I would, like everyone else, was offended by that. But, you know, if we're going to be honest with ourselves, I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot going on here after 2010. I mean, he didn't get to play with Hosmer and Moustakas and Kane and Perez and Escobar. I mean, he didn't get to play with those guys. They weren't here yet. So now that we get past it, he's been to the postseason. He's been to a couple World Series. He hasn't won one, but he's been to a couple World Series. He's making decisions now based on more than, you know, can I win a World Series, family and organization, all that stuff. I hope he's back. I mean, he can still pitch, and I'm hoping, I'm not saying that, you know, Daniel Lynch should start thinking about throwing 87 and 90 with his fastball. But let me ask you this. Do you remember me saying on a broadcast years ago, or just reading this years ago, he throws 95, but he's more effective at 92 to 93.
Yes.
You ever hear that anymore? I never hear that anymore. You just hear he throws 95 to 98, or he can throw 100. I remember that, hearing about that all the time. He can throw 95, but he's more effective 92 to 93. You just never hear that anymore.
We don't hear it. Sorry to interrupt you, Ryan, but I think it's a great point. Do we not hear it because now they are effective at 95, right? Is it maybe it's our field, the broadcast field. We're not as in touch with the game or something. I don't think that's it. Because when you're doing a job like you do, like the guys who call the games, you're just around it so much. You can't help but absorb a lot of what's going on. Is it with all the drive lines and the, you know, all the video technology, and, you know, guys, you know, everyone's throwing harder today. I hear everyone's throwing harder, and they act like they're just physically muscling the ball in there. But I think part of the equation is everyone's throwing harder because everybody's found their right arm slot now, where it's the best delivery. They're moving the hand faster. They're not just forcing the shoulder to do more work. They found the right spot through technology and video and different exercises and different weight training, you know, specifically designed for pitching, that they're throwing harder because, you know, he's better at 92 is really, he can go to 98, he's better at 95, or he can go to 100, he's better at 96 or 7. They're applying the same principle. The number is just bigger.
Yeah, maybe that's true. But I think what's lost, and this is true for hitters too, I think what's lost today, as I'm evaluating this, and, you know, we began all this with you and I talking about how old we are now. And you know, you and I are at an age, I'll speak for myself, I'm 51 years old now. I've been doing this almost 30 years, and I've seen, you know, broadcasters that are older than me, or even baseball people that are older than me, that just scoff at today's game. I've seen that happen like two or three different times in my career. And so the ones that survive are the ones that, like, okay, you know, this is the way it used to be played, but how are they winning today? And that's, you know, I think that's how you survive when you get older. We have to adjust, because they're not going to adjust to us. And the game's going to move on, and personality's going to move on, whatever. But here's what I see. Is I see that, okay, the power works. The analytics say that the power works both at the plate and on the mound over the span, because it feels like analytics say, okay, let's look at the span of 6 months, like what worked and what didn't work, right? And so that's fine. There's smarter guys studying that. I'm not going to debate them. They've spent way more time on it than I have. But where I think the analytics falls short, and when we lose the feel of the game as a hitter and as a pitcher, is, okay, this is the long-term plan, but what do you need to do right now to win this game? What do you need to do right now to get this hitter out? Because they're, and that's where the best hitters and the best pitchers, they may trend in a certain way with their numbers, but when the moment comes up, like, what are you going to do right now? And we're going to face a guy tonight, Miguel Cabrera. I've seen most of his career. Yeah, big home runs, big doubles, big slug, big OPS. But how many big hits has he gotten against us when he knew that they're pitching around him and he just thumbed one into right field for a base hit and drove in two runs and won the game, right? Whereas I think most today's hitters are like, well, this is how I hit. Yeah. And, yep, maybe I'm facing Garrett Cole right now, but I'm going to hit a home run because that's my swing. It's like, well, you're not going to beat Garrett Cole like that. So the power stuff, yeah, the numbers have gone up. And everything is trending, and that's how what works best. And I won't disagree with that. I'm not going to go down with that ship. I just, quite frankly, don't care enough to debate it. I'll just see what I see in the field. But where's the feel for the moment?
Well, so
what do you do? What do you do, Saran, when you throw the commercial and there's no commercial, right? I mean, you either know how to survive that moment right there. Or you don't.
And that is a great point, because I do. You're right. Like, you know, I love that analogy, because I immediately think of a time back in my day when I was at Sports Fan Radio Network, and we were on a network and the computer system died, and we literally did 3 straight hours without stopping. Thank God I didn't have to go to the bathroom. I hadn't had a soda or anything, but we had to cover. We could not leave for 3 hours. We talked, and we would reset and do all this stuff. And so that was a great learning experience for me. It was an emergency, and I learned, okay, if I have to talk for 3 hours, I can do it. And so when I got to talk an extra 5 minutes, like you say, that it doesn't, commercial doesn't fire, I can now do it. I have that experience in there. And I was thinking, because I agree with your point wholeheartedly, I don't always think harder is better. I think they're better at throwing harder, through all the reasons we just said. But when I watch, like, Max Scherzer, like, you know, over the last couple of years, who's just dealing, right? Just dealing. He's not 98. He used to be 98 with the Tigers and when he first came up, but now it's like slider, you know, breaking ball, 91, 92, but exactly where he wants to put it. And if I were to try to tie it together, it's, you know, you need that arsenal when you first come up, that overwhelming velocity, that overwhelming stuff, that great, you know, I remember Kerry Wood's stuff was like just unbelievable. And of course he blew out, and if you don't blow out, then you get the time. Like, I almost feel like it takes 250,000 pitches to be able to command the baseball the way we're talking about, to where you can beat the hitter by being 91 right where you want to put it, right? Like, but to get to that 250,000 pitches, you have to be good enough that you can miss by 10 inches and have the guy still not get good contact. And that takes the overwhelming stuff, the overwhelming break. And if you can make it through that where you don't blow out, then you can ease off, or, you know, wear and tear on the shoulder and the elbow eases it off for you. You can't bring it at that velocity anymore. But now you have that touch and feel, the better break, the sharper break on the different breaking balls, and you can pitch that way. But early on, you just can't be that efficient. We can tell them, listen, you don't have to throw that hard. Just throw it where it needs to go. But the physiology is the brain and the body can't do that until they've done the repetitions. And the repetitions are an enormous number that only comes from being in the big leagues and having the throwing sessions and the side sessions and the spring trainings and the off-season workouts. Like, you just can't shortcut the 100,000, or maybe it's million. I don't know. I have to sit and think about what the number might be of pitches that they throw. You can't shortcut that. No, there's no substitute for all the reps to get the body to be able to do that. There's certainly a skill. Zach is clearly a savant because we know he didn't pitch his whole little league career and everything. He was late to the game, and that's probably helped his arm overall be as durable as it's been. But there's just, you know, there's a talent level, but there's also no substitute for those repetitions.
If, the only thing I'll add to that, if you can somehow at the minor league level convince a player and his ego that we don't want you to throw as hard as you can right now. We want you to work on that touch and feel now in the minor leagues. And we are going to ignore the results for this period of time. And we want you to ignore those results for this period of time. And tell your agent to not call you for this period of time. That's the only way that you can accelerate that. If you do it in the minor league level. I just don't know if the personality of the player today and what they see when they watch TV allows that, because I think you can find a way to do it before a guy has been in the big leagues for 6 or 7 years. But do you have the patience, and does the player have the trust that, look, you're going to be better sooner if you figure this out now? They don't want to do that. I don't blame them. They want to get to the big leagues as quickly as possible. Their agents want them to get to the big leagues as quickly as possible. And just like with Vinny Pasquantino this year, everybody wanted Vinny Pasquantino to get to the big leagues as quickly as possible. But there were some few things that needed to be ironed out in the minor leagues that he's just not going to see until he gets to the big leagues. So everyone's rushing. Let's get him here. And I just don't know what today's mindset, you can accomplish the same in the minor leagues as you could have 20 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, and I also think, like, if the whole industry were pitching like Jamie Moyer, the hitters would crush it. But when you're Jamie Moyer against the backdrop of everybody
Nestor
else.
Cortez. Why is Nestor Cortez suddenly so good with the Yankees? I mean, why, you know, is it because that was his last resort? And, you know, I mean, he finally realized this is the only way I can get myself out, get myself to the big leagues and stay in the big leagues. And were the Yankees okay with accepting that? I mean, there's still room for that guy, but will teams take a chance on that guy? And will that guy allow himself to be that guy?
Well, exactly. I'm with you 100%. And why isn't every guy who's failing in the minor leagues throwing a knuckle? Like, I still am baffled by why Tim Wakefield is the last of a bunch. Like, you know, I don't understand why, you know, if you're not getting where you want to go, like, I get it if you're 20 and you're flamethrowing and you're moving through the organization. Like, I'm going to tinker with a knuckleball. I get it. It's a commitment. But the guy who, like, there's plenty of guys that are, you know, we talk about how little the minor leaguers make. They're 26 years old and they're in A ball and maybe sniffing double A. And they haven't gone to the pitch that really sets them apart. I'm with you. And all I can come back to is, Ryan, the NBA has dozens of guys who shoot 50-something percent from the free throw line and won't granny it up there. And anybody could granny 50-plus percent from the free throw line, but they won't do it because it looks silly. And the industry and your cohorts laugh at you when you lob one in there at 70. Like, I think it's the same mindset, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. There it is. We solved it. We did it. We made it work.
Sounds like the same conversation we had 20 years ago.
Yeah, it does. It does. We're talking to Ryan LaFever here in the program. Let's get to our final four. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have a sports injury, an orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. See the people that care for the Royals, the University of Kansas Health System. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. Ryan, let's start you with this. Who's your favorite pitcher to watch right now?
My favorite pitcher to watch right now? Zach.
Yeah, no doubt.
No doubt.
100%.
Yep.
Who's your favorite pitcher to talk to?
Well, I don't want to keep going back to Zach, so let me think of somebody.
That's my whole point.
Yeah.
Zach, right?
And second place would be Josh Stamont.
Okay. Okay. I always enjoyed my conversations with him as well. I think he's a fun kid as well. I like that. I'll take that one. Who's your favorite hitter to watch?
Bobby Wood Jr.
Yeah. I
think watching him grow from opening day till now, just every at bat is just so interesting to me, because it began with him. I felt the first month of the season, he would swing at one pitch in every at bat that he shouldn't, you know, so he was in the hole, and it's just evolving and it's getting better, and he's taking his walks and hitting the ball to all fields. I think every time he comes up, I'm about as intrigued as everyone else is when they're watching on TV.
I still enjoy a Salvi at bat. I still enjoy watching him go get a pitch that he shouldn't be swinging for and drive it, you know, and just marvel at how he's able to do that. The Salvi at bats are still fun for me. You know, when he's healthy and going, I still don't know how he got to that ball and did what he did against the A's to, you know, win the wild card game in 2014. And every time he comes up, I'm like, I might see something that I, you know, can't explain with this guy.
Right.
So they're fun at bats for me as well. I also might be like, Salvi, come on. What was that swing?
But when he swings it one way out of the strike zone, good point. That's a good reminder. When he swings it one way out of the strike zone, when he comes back, we have to remember the wild card.
That's right. I always do. I always do. So his at-bats are always entertaining for me as well. All right, what's your favorite ballpark outside of Kauffman Stadium now?
Oh, gosh. None of them. I'd rather just be home.
Come on, you got to have one. I know what you've said in the past.
I don't know. I mean, okay, I'm going to sound like a cranky old broadcaster, but with the new stadiums now, we're just getting higher and farther away from home plate, you know, which is fine, whatever. So I'm probably going to be the ones where we're still low and we have a good view of the ballpark. And of course, gosh, I'm just trying to, this isn't a bad one here in Detroit. Of course I can't think of anyone particular right now, but there's no place like home. Kauffman Stadium is as a broadcaster, I can tell you, and just it being our home ballpark is the best in so many ways. It's so great even now that when teams come, they're just always saying, gosh, I love being here.
Yeah. Yeah. I you said way back in the day, Seattle.
Yeah. But I think Seattle had to do with the weather, especially when we go there in July and August, when we're just melting here in Kansas City, and then go to Seattle and it was so refreshing. And I love seafood. So you could walk to so many great seafood places in Seattle. So I think I was giving you an all-encompassing answer back then.
Okay. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Ryan, you're the best, man. We appreciate it. Have a great call tonight, this weekend, and get back home to KC. We look forward to seeing you and talking to you soon, my friend.
All right, Seren. Great to talk with you.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. How many players from the 2013 NBA draft are still with the team they made their debut with? a sentence that is, I don't like to use the word with twice, or in the sentence in a preposition. Mrs. Smallridge would probably curse at me.
Because you're a bad student?
No, I was an excellent student, but she was like, oh, don't end a sentence in a preposition. Bork, oh, you're
an excellent English student?
Yes.
You know, myself?
I was pretty good.
You know, myself?
What about you?
The English?
No.
You know, how do you think I did?
I bet you probably did pretty well.
I grinded my way to a decent grade.
Did you?
Right? But it was a grind. None of it. And I remember none of it. None of it. I just, you know, the ellipses. It solves everything. I mocked at my house when I write things and my daughters are around. Dad, can't use an ellipses for everything. I'm like, au contraire. You really can, because I do it all the time.
My dad worked in the printing business and was responsible. He's what they call back then a makeup man. That's a person who actually makes up, puts together whatever the page is going to be. And so he knew the English language very well and made sure that I did too. A lot of the things I think back of, what was that dad said? Okay. That's
so you're saying my mom didn't care about me? Is that what you're getting at? Is that
no,
the point here?
No.
You're going to eat her chicken.
I just had a... My dad was a stickler for it. Spelling, punctuation, having good printing, and knowing what words were right.
Okay.
But with all those apologies, how many players from the 2013 NBA draft are still on the team they made their debut with? And I say debut because instead of drafted, because we all know what the NBA draft is.
Who was the 1-1?
That would have been one Anthony Bennett.
Doesn't help.
Not at all.
It's not him. What's the jumping off point for this question?
Rudy Gobert was
Rudy Gobert
was one of two.
So I'm going to say there's one other.
Yes.
You said how many, right?
Oh, I did say how many.
You always, I'm so good at just getting you to give me the answer.
Keep on talking, I'll give it to you. The answer is one.
Good thing you're not like in the CIA.
Do you want to know who the one is? Oh, that would not be good. No, this we'd be a different country right now. Find new national secrets. Nope.
I will not tell you what's got to, you know. Well, so there's an invasion. Well, in Normandy in like 7 days, but you know,
we would have never gotten Bin Laden.
let's see. So it's one guy.
One guy. He is a two-time MVP.
Steph Curry
has won.
Now that Steph was way longer than that.
Yep. Steph was 09.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Antetokounmpo. He's the only guy from that draft class still playing for his team?
The only guy still playing for the team he made his debut.
And I'm looking over your shoulders. You've got the draft. Who was the rookie of the year?
You're looking right at it. Yeah, I'm looking. I think that's the one that's shaded in purple.
Was not Giannis. Michael Carter Williams, who most people don't know who he is, where he played. He was a Syracuse point guard, but has bounced around the league, but couldn't shoot. Who I think to this point I have correctly said Lonzo Ball is going to be a lot more like Michael Carter Williams than he is going to be like a star.
Got Syracuse,
and I think I've nailed that.
Seed though, didn't he?
We did not get to be a one seed. We did beat a one seed
at
Indiana.
You were the four. That's right. I knew. Okay, knew it started with an S though.
Yeah.
I'll go back to my cave.
I remember that god-awful uniform matchup in the Final Four. Syracuse and the orange against Michigan and that maze. Those uniforms individually are fantastic. You do not want to put orange and yellow on the same court. It was awful. They've met more than once in that matchup, and it just looks terrible. But the uniforms, I love Syracuse's orange unis, and the maze in blue looks great.
What are we playing for there? Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead, Adam. just stop. You don't get to win every year. I go, oh, God, my heart was ripped out. You've won enough. Settle down. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear you whine.
Especially
okay?
Missouri fan.
Yeah, exactly.
Like my buddy. Every single...
My heart was ripped out. I mean, it was 5 minutes until I won another conference championship. It was 10 minutes until I went to a Final Four again. Stop.
Yeah.
Just stop. Nobody wants to hear it.
My buddy Matt, KU fan. Anytime some great player, oh, man, I wish KU would have gotten him. I wish KU would have gotten him. You can't have all the players. Duke's going to get some of them.
Carolina,
Kentucky.
Some. You don't get your share. More than your share, for crying out loud.
You look at that matchup and tell me that's anything but ghastly.
It looks good in an ice cream parlor.
No.
Tell me that doesn't look good in an ice cream parlor. You wouldn't walk in and be thrilled to see those colors. Ben and Jerry's.
Maybe.
I mean, if you're a sherbet guy like me, absolutely.
Yes.
It is the program. What are we playing for again?
Playing for some Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.
You know there's a Joe's right here.
Right across the way, yes.
117th and Row. You can go grab yourself some Joe's. Get it right now on your way home. You can go to joeskc.com, put that order in. You know you can send it anywhere in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere in the country, young lady.
She's wearing orange.
Yes, she is wearing orange. Beautiful orange.
Yellow.
Yes, appreciate it. And taking advantage of the watermelon. You know, they got the sliced watermelon, like a bag. It's like pre-sliced. It's like, I think it's 3 pounds, and it's like $6. Great item to come in here and get for your 4th of July. We're at Hen House at 119th and Metcalf, or 119th and Row, excuse me, right across the parking lot from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. They have everything. We've had a lot of people, seen a lot of folks, said hello to a lot of folks, some legendary folks. Bill Grady.
Bill Grady.
It was great to see Bill Grady, who we used to work with back in the day. Great newsman. We saw Doug Tucker. Too cool for school. Didn't say hi to us. AP scribe for years. Did not bother to come over and say hello to us.
Nope. Shunned us.
Used to think he was our friend. Leif Lysick was here.
Leif Lysick was earlier. I can't understand why he looks younger than he did 30 years ago, and I look like I could be his father. But, you know, hey, I'm getting used to that.
Yeah, it's just a reality. It's just a reality check is what it is.
Hit the genetic lottery.
And we got to talk to Ryan Lefevre. Always a good thing.
Yes.
Couldn't be a better guy. All those kind words. And he brought back memories talking about, were you there when he moved?
I did. The Joe Randa story, I forgot
about. You forgot
about
that? Were you there when he moved?
No, I almost thought on my chair.
Of course not.
I wasn't.
Because if anybody moves, you never help.
No.
Notice all the stories that come up where I was there helping people move.
Yes.
You are nowhere to be found.
I had a truck for 15 years after I graduated high school. I moved enough people.
You have not moved squat since I've known you.
Nope.
Nothing. Nothing at all.